Chapter 7. Geometry of the Physical World. For over two millennia, Euclidean geometry provided a framework for interpreting empirical observations and making accurate predictions for phenomena like solar eclipses. However, as our measuring apparatus improved, it became clear that the geometry of the universe is not that of Euclidean space. 20th century theories of physics, including Einstein's general and special relativity, are based on geometries different to Euclidean geometry that describe the universe more accurately. The most basic of these is Minkowski geometry, which replaces Pythagorean distance by a space-time interval, where the squared interval S between two points, called events in this chapter, capital P and capital P prime, with space-time coordinates T, X, Y, Z, and T prime, X prime, Y prime, Z prime, is S times open parenthesis capital P prime close parenthesis squared equals C squared times open parenthesis T minus T prime close parenthesis squared minus open parenthesis X minus X prime close parenthesis squared minus open parenthesis Y minus Y prime close parenthesis squared minus open parenthesis Z minus Z prime close parenthesis squared, where the constant C equals 299,792,458 meters per second is the speed of light. The theory of gravitation is based on a curved version, in the sense described in Chapter 4 of the Minkowski distance. It turns out that electromagnetic, as well as weak and strong nuclear interactions, are also manifestations of curvature, but this time in the internal spaces of charges, in the case of electromagnetism, or so-called colours, in the case of the quantum theory of strong interactions holding quarks together. It may well be that there is some kind of geometry which unifies the geometry of Einstein's gravity with those of the other three fundamental interactions, but at the time of writing, we have no idea what this geometry would look like. In this chapter, I shall therefore only explore the geometries rather than the underlying physical theories, which are the subjects of other very short introductions of general and special relativity. Special relativity. The foundations of special relativity were laid down by Albert Einstein in 1905, but it was the German mathematician Hermann Minkowski who recognized that the geometrical framework of Einstein's theory is a four-dimensional space-time. We shall call this space-time capital M. The points of capital M are called events. Events are idealized building blocks of the fabric of the universe. To specify an event, one gives its location in space as well as the time of its occurrence. This information is encoded in four Cartesian coordinates, T, X, Y, Z. One of the properties of distance in Euclidean, as well as the spherical, hyperbolic, and Riemannian geometries that we encountered in the earlier chapters, is positivity. The distance between two points is a non-negative number which can be zero if and only if the two points coincide. The distance in Minkowski geometry does not have this property. For example, the space-time interval between two points, capital P and capital Q, with space-time coordinates 1, 0, 0, 0, and 0, C, 0, 0, vanishes as S times open parenthesis capital P of capital Q, close parenthesis, squared, equals C squared times open parenthesis 1 minus 0, close parenthesis, squared, minus open parenthesis 0 minus C, close parenthesis, squared, equals 0. Let capital P be any point in the Minkowski space. The interval function divides the Minkowski space into three regions, capital R sub plus, capital R sub 0, and capital R sub minus, which consist of all points capital Q, such that S times open parenthesis capital P of capital Q, close parenthesis squared, is greater than 0. S times open parenthesis capital P of capital Q, close parenthesis squared, equals 0. And S times open parenthesis capital P of capital Q, close parenthesis squared, is less than 0, respectively. The horizontal plane on figure 69 represents the spatial directions with coordinates x, y, z. This plane is three-dimensional, but appears as two-dimensional on the picture. Region capital R sub zero is the three-dimensional surface of a cone, called the light cone of capital P in four-dimensional spacetime. To see that it is indeed a cone, assume that the reference frame has been chosen so that the coordinates of capital P are 0, 0, 0, 0, and the coordinates of capital Q are T, X, Y, Z. Then the condition S times open parenthesis P of capital Q close parenthesis squared equals 0 is equivalent to C squared times T squared minus X squared minus Y squared minus Z squared equals 0, which is the equation of a cone in four-dimensional Cartesian coordinates. The region capital R sub zero is further divided into the future light cone, where T is greater than zero, and the past light cone, where T is less than zero. This terminology is motivated by special relativity, where the light cone at capital P consists of light rays passing through capital P. According to quantum theory, light consists of massless particles called photons. Thus, a photon emitted at capital P will travel along the future light cone, and a photon absorbed at capital P reached it along the past light cone. All points inside the light cone belong to capital R sub plus. In special relativity, nothing, including information, can travel faster than light. Therefore, only events in regions capital R sub plus and capital R sub zero, with T being less than zero, could have influenced capital P. Similarly, a signal sent from capital P can only reach capital R sub plus and capital R sub zero, with T being greater than zero. Moreover, capital R sub zero can only be reached by a photon emitted at capital P, and a massive object referred to as an observer is confined to capital R sub plus. The causal future of capital P consists of capital R sub plus and capital R sub zero, with T being greater than zero. Events outside the causal future of capital P could not have been influenced by capital P in any way. Similarly, the causal past of capital P has T less than zero. Events in capital R sub minus are not causally related to capital P. No information about this region will ever reach capital P, and no signal sent from capital P can reach capital R sub minus. The future light cone is the boundary region of the causal future of capital P. The slope of this light cone is given by the speed of light, c, and it is customary to align it at 45 degrees. A trajectory of a massive particle moving with constant velocity of magnitude v being less than c corresponds to a straight line through capital P and confined to capital R sub plus. To sum up, the geometry of the four-dimensional Minkowski space is richer than that of the four-dimensional Euclidean space, the set of real numbers to the power of 4. While both spaces are endowed with notions of distance, the Minkowski space has the causal structure which is absent in the Euclidean geometry. Recall that a straight line segment in Euclidean space minimizes the distance between its two endpoints. Consider instead extremizing the interval between two events, capital P and capital Q, such that capital Q is inside the light cone of capital P. The straight line segment inside capital R sub plus, joining capital P to capital Q, leads to the positive interval S times open parenthesis capital P of capital Q close parenthesis squared. If we instead join capital P and capital Q with line segments lying on the light cones and add the corresponding intervals, dashed lines in figure 69, then the resulting interval is zero. Moreover, joining capital P and capital Q zigzagging along line segments in capital R sub minus, we can make the interval S times open parenthesis capital P of capital Q close parenthesis squared as negative as we want to. Therefore, in Minkowski geometry, a straight line segment joining capital P and another event, capital Q, in the region capital R sub plus maximizes the space-time interval between capital P and capital Q. This is a consequence of the reversed triangle inequality, where the segments of a triangle lie inside the light cones of their vertices. S times open parenthesis capital P of capital R close parenthesis plus S times open parenthesis capital R of capital Q close parenthesis is less than or equal to S times open parenthesis capital P of capital Q close parenthesis. Curves in space-time are called world lines. Thus, a world line is different from a trajectory in space, as it also incorporates the time direction. World lines of photons are confined to light cones, and world lines of massive observers, for example astronauts, but also elementary particles, moving with constant velocity and passing through an event capital P, are straight lines in the region capital R sub plus. One consequence of the geometry considered thus far is that time simultaneity is a notion relative to an observer. There is no absolute notion of time in special relativity. To see this, consider two observers, 0 and 0 prime, call them Alice and Bob, who meet at capital P and agree that the time coordinate at capital P is 0. Let capital P sub 1 and capital P sub 2 be two events which are simultaneous according to Alice. This means that the world lines of photons emitted at capital P sub 1 and capital P sub 2 intersect the world line of Alice at the same point. The second observer, Bob, will detect the photon emitted at capital P sub 1 before he detects the photon emitted at capital P sub 2. He will reckon that capital P sub 1 happened before capital P sub 2. We could colour this picture by adding a third observer who, by similar reasoning, will perceive capital P sub 2 before he sees capital P sub 1. The three observers will fundamentally disagree about the time ordering of events capital P sub 1 and capital P sub 2, and yet their calculation of the space-time interval, S times open parenthesis capital P sub 1 of capital P sub 2 close parenthesis squared, will give the same answer. The three-dimensional planes of simultaneity differ for Alice and Bob, but they are related by a transformation which I shall now discuss. Let us recall the Cartesian coordinate approach to Euclidean geometry and assume that we want to describe a tetrahedron in three-dimensional space, but by using two coordinate systems with the same origin. The Cartesian coordinates of the vertices of the tetrahedron will be different in both coordinate systems, but the distances between the vertices will not depend on the choices of coordinates. Both coordinate systems are related by a rotation which is an isometry of space. If the form of this rotation is given, for example, as a 3x3 matrix, then the coordinates of the tetrahedron in one system can be found by applying a transformation to the coordinates in the second system. The isometries of the Minkowski space, which preserve the space-time distance, consist of four translations in the x, y, z, and t directions, three spatial rotations of the x, y, z space, and three transformations called the Lorentz boosts, which mix up the time and space coordinates 0 and 0 prime used by Alice and Bob. If Bob travels with velocity v in the x direction relative to Alice, then the Lorentz boost between the two coordinate systems 0 and 0 prime is t prime equals gamma times open parenthesis t minus the fraction with the numerator v times x and the denominator c squared close parenthesis, and x prime equals gamma times open parenthesis x minus v times t close parenthesis, and y prime equals y, and z prime equals z, where gamma equals the fraction with the numerator 1 and the denominator the square root of 1 minus the fraction with the numerator v squared and the denominator c squared. These transformation rules imply that if an object moves at the speed of light in the coordinate system 0, then it moves with the same speed in the coordinate system 0 prime. The speed of light is the same for all observers. Another consequence of the Lorentz boost is a time dilation. If a clock used by Alice ticks at time intervals capital T, then the tick events take place at points with coordinates C capital T, 0, 0, 0, 2 C capital T, 0, 0, 0, 3 C capital T, 0, 0, 0, and so on. In the coordinate system 0 prime used by Bob, the interval between the ticks is capital T times gamma, which is longer than in the frame of Alice moving with zero velocity. Similarly, the spatial directions undergo contractions where one passes between the coordinate systems of Alice and Bob. A tetrahedron on the t equals zero plane, relative to zero, corresponds, after a Lorentz transformation, to another tetrahedron, but with smaller spatial area and distorted angles in the coordinate system zero prime used by Bob. In fact, the time contraction together with the absolute value of the speed of light implies that space contraction must also take place. This can be illustrated as follows. If Alice, who inhabits planet Earth, uses a second as a unit of time, then the light second, equal to 299,792,458 meters, is her natural unit of distance. This is the distance travelled by light at the absolute speed c in 1 second. In these units, the Sun is around 8 light minutes from the Earth. For all Alice knows, the Sun may have exploded a minute ago, but she would not have noticed anything unusual, as the light did not have enough time to reach her. However, as we have heard, the second measured by Alice was different to that measured by Bob. Thus, the meaning of the distance 8 light minutes is also observer-dependent. There is another geometric approach to Lorentz transformations, which brings up the projective geometry from Chapter 5. Think of Alice looking at the stars in the night sky. The points she sees in the sky are intersections of the world lines of stars with Alice's own past light cone. These are points on the celestial sphere, which arise as the intersection of the light cone c squared times t squared minus x squared minus y squared minus z squared equals zero, with the plane t equals negative t sub zero, where t sub zero is the time it took for the light to travel between the stars and Alice. If we take t sub zero to be minus one, then this intersection is indeed a sphere in the set of real numbers cubed of radius c. Different choices of t sub zero merely change this radius. Let Bob be another observer moving with a constant velocity v with respect to Alice. If the world lines of Alice and Bob intersect at a point capital P, then both observers at capital P will perceive the same stars, but located at different points on their respective celestial spheres. The Lorentz transformation which takes the celestial sphere of Alice to that of Bob is z prime equals the fraction with the numerator a times z plus b and the denominator c times z plus d prime, where z is the complex coordinate obtained by the stereographic projection from the sphere, x squared plus y squared plus z squared equals c squared to the z equals zero plane. Recall figure 48 from chapter 4. This is nothing but a Möbius transformation, which we encountered in chapter 6, but now mapping a complex projective line to another such line. The complex numbers A, B, C, D are the parameters of the Lorentz transformation and are subject to one relation. A times D minus B times C equals 1. Therefore, only 3 out of the 4 complex parameters can be specified arbitrarily. The transformation depends on 6 real parameters, 2 for each of the complex numbers. 3 of them are the angles of spatial rotations on the 3-dimensional planes of simultaneity, and the other 3 correspond to the Lorentz boosts. Geometry of Newtonian spacetimes. Let us compare the geometric structures of Minkowski spacetime with those arising in the theories of space and time predating special relativity. Contrary to a popular belief, these pre-relativistic spacetimes are also 4-dimensional, but they have an absolute observer-independent notion of time. The geometry resulting from an assumption that both space and time are absolute is called the Aristotelian spacetime, capital A. In Aristotelian geometry, an observer at rest is preferred to all other observers moving with constant velocity. This has presumably resulted from the Greek belief that the Earth occupies a special place in the cosmos. Therefore, capital A equals time times space equals the set of real numbers times the set of real numbers cubed. The Aristotelian space-time distance between Alice at midday and Bob at 6 p.m. is given by two numbers. The time interval between the two events, equal to 6 hours, and the Euclidean distance between the two observers as the crow flies. The next geometry in the ladder is the Galilean space-time, capital G, used in the Newtonian theory of gravitation. The laws of physics in the Galilean space-time can also be formulated in geometric terms. This has been clarified by the French mathematician Élie Cartan. Time is absolute in capital G, but space is not, in that one cannot make sense of distances between points unless they lie on the same plane of simultaneity. The Aristotelian way of computing the distance between Alice and Bob does not make sense in capital G. We can only say how far apart Alice and Bob are at any given time. The notion of space is different for each instant of time, but there exists a projection of capital G to the time axis, the set of real numbers, associating the time coordinate to any point in the Galilean space-time. Such geometric structures are called fibre bundles. The fibre of each point of the time axis, the set of real numbers, is a copy of the three-dimensional Euclidean space, the set of real numbers cubed, together with its Euclidean distance. In the Minkowski space-time of special relativity, the speed of light and space-time intervals are both absolute, but neither space nor time are. The space-time of general relativity. The geometric formulation of special relativity was built on observational data, suggesting a need for a new theory of space and time. By contrast, Einstein's general relativity, the theory of gravitation consistent with special relativity, was driven not by experiments or observations, but to a large extent by geometric aesthetics. Einstein's great insight was that gravitational attraction is an effect of space-time curvature. The bending of a comet trajectory by the sun's gravity can be explained by postulating that the comet is in fact moving along a geodesic which maximizes the space-time interval, but in the presence of curvature. The resulting path will appear to us as an ellipse. It is important to stress that this ellipse is a geodesic not in a three-dimensional space, but in four-dimensional space-time. The theory emerged in 1915, but it took several decades to come to terms with its mathematical complexities, some of which have still not been resolved. The geometric passage from the Minkowski space-time to the Einsteinian space-time of general relativity is analogous to the step from Euclidean geometry to a curved geometry. In Einstein's theory of gravity, the universe is a four-dimensional manifold, epsilon, and it may not be possible to cover it with a single coordinate system. The Minkowski distance is replaced by a curved metric, g, of a sort we discussed in Chapter 4, but with the proviso that the distance function resulting from this metric does not have to be positive definite. Such metrics are called pseudo-Riemannian. A new feature resulting from dropping the positivity of the distance is the possibility that two non-identical points in space-time can be connected by a curve of zero length. Such curves are called null. Light travels throughout the space-time along geodesics, which are also null curves. As in Minkowski space, the metric of general relativity equips space-time with a causal structure given by light cones, but more assumptions need to be made on the pair, capital E, G, to rule out the pathologies associated with time travel. We did not have to worry about it in the Minkowski space, where the world line of an observer cannot start and end at the same point in figure 69, as otherwise it would have to cross from capital R sub plus to region capital R sub minus, which is ruled out, as signals and massive particles cannot travel faster than light. The situation is more subtle if the light cones are deformed by the presence of curvature and the space-time capital E is allowed to be a manifold. Imagine capital E as a four-dimensional donut, where the light cones go around the hole in the middle and a time-like path could be taken by an observer to return to its starting point. This leads to a plethora of paradoxes. Alice moving along such a curve could eventually reach her own past, thus opening possibilities to interesting scenarios, some of which have been explored in the Back to the Future movie trilogy. It is assumed that none of this can take place. In general relativity, no particular coordinate system is preferred, and therefore the laws of physics with their geometric description need to be formulated in a coordinate-free way. This is achieved by employing tensor calculus. A vector, a pseudo-Riemannian metric, and its curvature are all examples of tensors. A tensor is a collection of numbers, for example, components of a vector in some coordinate system, together with a rule on how these numbers transform if one changes from one coordinate system to another. This rule is such that if a tensor vanishes in one coordinate system, it vanishes in all systems. Thus, the property for space-time to be curved at some point is coordinate independent. The Riemann curvature introduced in Chapter 4 naturally splits into two parts, called Ricci and Weyl, and satisfies the Einstein equations. Einstein curvature of spacetime equals matter and pressure density of the universe. Skipping over details, the left-hand side of the Einstein equations is a tensor, called the Einstein tensor and made out of, but not exactly equal to, the Ricci curvature. So the right-hand side has to be one too. It is called the energy-momentum tensor. This tensor may also contain the cosmological term causing the Ricci curvature to increase with distance. Mass, concentrated in some region of space-time, contributes to the Ricci curvature, which in turn has an effect of reducing the volume of this region. The American physicist John Archibald Wheeler summarized these equations well in one sentence. Matter tells space-time how to curve, and curved space-time tells matter how to move. A star moving in a galaxy will curve the space-time around it. This curvature will in effect modify geodesics, and thus the trajectory of the star. The Weyl curvature is not determined by the Einstein equations, and corresponds to gravitational degrees of freedom. In particular, a metric may satisfy the Einstein equations in a space-time with no matter content, and nevertheless be curved because of the presence of Weyl curvature. The Weyl curvature distorts the geometry of space-time in a way analogous to how the moon causes tides in the ocean. It exerts tidal forces on particles and light moving through the space-time. This effect preserves the volumes of space-time regions affected by the curvature, but changes their shape. The unknown in the Einstein equations is the space-time metric. As the Einstein curvature depends on derivatives of the metric, the Einstein equations fall into the class of differential equations and form one of the trickiest systems of such equations known to science. Not only is the metric unknown, but also the underlying manifold, capital E, supporting this metric needs to be found. The equations are non-linear, which is a technical term signalling to students and researchers that all methods they have acquired at school and university to solve differential equations are likely to fail. One solution to the Einstein equations is Minkowski space. The curvature vanishes for this solution, and so there is no matter content in the Minkowski universe. Thus, as was to be expected, the special relativity falls into the framework of general relativity. Very few other solutions have been found. Each such solution does in principle give a candidate for a universe, and we shall shortly discuss one in some detail. So the researchers focused on finding the qualitative properties of solutions. The idea is to specify the initial data consisting of the space-time metric and its rate of change on some three-dimensional surface of constant time, and see whether the Einstein equations fully determine the evolution of such initial data. If they did, then general relativity would be a deterministic theory, with Einstein equations governing the dynamics of space-times. You tell me the data at time equal to zero, and I, with the help of my research students, postdocs and supercomputers, will in principle be able to solve the Einstein equations to tell you what this metric will be in the future. Unfortunately, we now know of situations where this predictability of general relativity does not hold. There exist solutions of Einstein equations called black holes, where general relativity predicts its own failure. We shall discuss them next. Geometry outside a black hole. As in special relativity, the space-time, capital E, of general relativity can be thought of as a collection of light cones, one cone through each point in capital E. The cones are easy to visualise. Start at an event capital P and draw the locus of all events with zero space-time interval from capital P. Therefore, knowing the space-time intervals between all space-time events definitely determines the cones. On the other hand, the cones do not completely determine the interval, but they will suffice for what I want to explain. Only from the knowledge of the cones can we determine whether capital P and capital Q have zero interval between them. This happens if and only if capital P belongs to the light cone of capital Q, or capital Q belongs to the light cone of capital P. Similarly, capital P and capital Q can be connected by a geodesic of a positive length. Such geodesics are called time-like. If capital P lies inside the cone of capital Q, or capital Q lies inside the cone of capital P. While the light cones in Minkowski space have the same slope given by the speed of light, the cones in curved space-times can be bent by space-time curvature. Just a year after general relativity was discovered, while he was serving in the German army during the First World War, the German physicist Karl Schwarzschild found a solution to the Einstein equations that shows this. The time direction goes upwards, and one of the three space directions has been suppressed. Light cones far from the centre of the figure look like those in Minkowski space, which has no curvature. Moving away from the flat region towards the three-dimensional cylindrical surface, capital H, called the event horizon, the curvature effects become relevant and the light cones bend towards capital H. In the limiting case, when a point capital P lies on the horizon, the light cone of capital P is tangent to capital H. All future pointing time-like and null curves through capital P, with the exception of null curves, tangent to capital H, will enter the region bounded by capital H. If a point capital P is inside the horizon, then future pointing null or time-like geodesics through capital P cannot leave the region inside the horizon. Thus, no information about the region inside the horizon can ever reach observers outside the horizon. The event horizon is not made of any matter. It is a three-dimensional surface which can only be crossed in one direction, and separates the region in space-time from which the light rays can escape to infinity, and the region from which no signal can escape. It is this region, bounded by the cylinder capital H in figure 74, located in the print version of this book, which is referred to as a black hole. The geodesics in the black hole space-time are different to those in the Minkowski space. This effect, which becomes stronger nearer the event horizon, can be illustrated by the following example. Alice and Bob meet at some event outside the horizon. Alice decides to venture into the black hole, and Bob will stay outside. Alice sends Bob updates from her journey by emitting light rays every second as measured by her. Geometrically, this comes down to dividing Alice's trajectory into segments with equal space-time intervals and drawing a null geodesic away from the horizon from the endpoint of each segment. As Alice's light cones tilt near the horizon, so does the slope of each light ray she emits. Consider two signals emitted by Alice at events capital Q and capital R. Bob detects them at events capital Q prime and capital R prime. But the space-time intervals satisfy S times open parenthesis capital Q of capital R close parenthesis squared is less than S times open parenthesis capital Q prime of capital R prime close parenthesis squared. So that, according to Bob, the frequency of the signals sent by Alice goes down as she approaches the horizon. The closer Alice gets to the horizon, the stronger this effect becomes. Alice finally crosses the horizon at the event, capital S, and duly sends a message to Bob from there. He will, however, never receive it, as the light ray through capital S will stay tangent to the horizon. From Bob's perspective, Alice slows down as she approaches the horizon, without ever getting there. Bob will receive the message sent by Alice just before she reached capital S. He may have to wait a long time, perhaps millions of years according to his clock. That would depend on the mass of the black hole and on how far Bob and Alice were from the horizon when they parted, but this will be the last message he will have received. Alice, on the other hand, will carry on with her journey towards the now unavoidable singularity. The path along which Alice travels is at a finite space-time interval from the singularity, so Alice will reach the singularity in finite proper time. Recall that the proper time is just the interval divided by the speed of light. Then space and time will end for Alice. Our current understanding of general relativity offers Alice no guidance as to what happens next. The Schwarzschild solution to Einstein's equations describes a time-independent gravitational field of a spherically symmetric body of mass, M. This body could be a star which collapsed under its own gravity. If the star is sufficiently massive, the gravitational force dominates the pressure of the matter inside the star, and the star collapses down to a singularity of infinite density at R equals zero, where R is the radial coordinate centred in the middle of the cylinder in figure 74. Thus a black hole is the final stage of gravitational collapse. The matter of a star collapses inwards through the surface of a three-dimensional curved cone. Once the spatial section of this cone crosses the Schwarzschild radius, R equals 2m divided by c squared, it becomes the event horizon and the star turns into a black hole. The geometry of space-time from this moment onwards is represented in figure 74. Putting m equal to the mass of the Earth into the expression for the Schwarzschild metric, we can compute that the radius of the event horizon is equal to about 1 centimetre. Thus, the whole Earth would need to be squeezed into the volume of a small walnut to create a black hole. There is now direct observational evidence that black holes of masses equal to 10 or more solar masses exist in the universe. Some black holes are far heavier than that. On the 10th of April 2019, the team of scientists behind the Event Horizon Telescope released an image of a black hole of mass exceeding 6 billion solar masses in the centre of the M87 galaxy. The horizon of this enormous black hole is about 18 billion kilometres from its centre, and the gravitational force at this horizon is about a quarter of the Earth's gravity. An observer crossing such a horizon would not experience any unusual effects. Thus, for all you know, the Earth may be falling into a black hole as you are listening to this. If that is indeed happening, you are doomed. In the next section, I shall explain how the geometry of space-time ends inside a black hole. Geometry inside a black hole. The expression for the Schwarzschild metric becomes invalid at the surface of the horizon. This apparently singular behaviour is also indicated by the vertical slope of the light cones tangent to the horizon. The gradient of these slopes is given by the formula plus or minus the fraction with the numerator r and the denominator r minus 2m divided by c squared, which is close to 1 and corresponds to 45 degrees, which is familiar from special relativity. If r is large and then increases as r becomes smaller and finally blows up at capital H, where r equals 2m divided by c squared. The curvature of the Schwarzschild space-time is, however, well-defined and finite at capital H. This initially caused a lot of confusion, which took over 40 years to clear. It is now understood that the metric can be made completely regular at the horizon if different coordinates are chosen. This is allowed, as, after all, a space-time is a manifold, and more than one coordinate system may be needed to describe it. The second problematic region for the Schwarzschild solution is the thick vertical line in figure 74, corresponding to the zero radial distance r equals zero. This is an intrinsic singularity where the Riemann curvature becomes infinite. It cannot be removed by passing to different coordinates, and a thorough analysis of what happens with geodesics near r equals zero gave rise to the geometric theory of singularities for other solutions to the Einstein equations. A problem with defining a singularity as a region in space-time, where the curvature is infinite, is that one may remove such a region from the manifold and declare space-time to be what is left after the surgery. The resulting space-time has finite curvature, but another pathology emerges. There exist geodesic curves which cannot be extended indefinitely. Such geodesics are called incomplete. An illustration can be a surface of a cone in the Euclidean 3 space, with the vertex removed. The curvature of this space-time is everywhere finite, and in fact equal to zero. But the geodesics, which are the generators of the cone, have nowhere to go once they have reached the edge. Therefore, one cannot get rid of the singularity by simply removing the vertex of the cone. It took mathematicians some time to come up with a good definition of what a singularity is. In 1965, Roger Penrose established a theorem which stated that once several reasonable assumptions are made, the space-time of general relativity must contain a singularity. This theorem, for which Penrose was eventually awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2020, was subsequently improved and extended by Penrose together with Stephen Hawking. The assumptions behind the Penrose-Hawking theorems are that there are no closed time-like curves, and that the gravitational force is attractive and strong enough so that there exists a region of space-time such that all null and time-like geodesics are trapped in this region. Thus, the situation we have analysed in Figure 74 is not, as was initially thought, an artifact of spherical symmetry of the Schwarzschild solution. It is generic. There is a black hole singularity at the final stage of the gravitational collapse of massive stars, resulting in the end of time for particles moving along incomplete geodesics. Such particles reach, in finite time, the region where neither time nor space makes sense. This is the inevitable fate of any observer crossing the event horizon. Another kind of singularity which arises in general relativity is the initial singularity present at the beginning of the universe, called the Big Bang. The theorem explaining the initial singularity was proved by Stephen Hawking in his doctoral thesis by reversing the direction of time in Penrose's argument and turning the gravitational collapse into expansion of the universe. The Penrose-Hawking theorems show the inevitability of singularities, but offer no guidance as to their nature, except that the laws of physics as we know them and their geometric description break down. A new type of geometry may be needed to describe the physics inside black holes, and some insight into this new geometry could perhaps be gained by observing what happens to particles as they reach the singularity. However, this is not possible for an observer outside the event horizon, as no signal from the singularity can pass through the horizon surface. Roger Penrose has put forward the cosmic censorship hypothesis, which states that a gravitational collapse always results in a black hole. All singularities are hidden inside an event horizon. To paraphrase, there exists a cosmic censor preventing the creation of a naked singularity which can be observed directly. Despite its theological and philosophical appeal, this hypothesis is a highly technical problem in mathematical analysis and differential geometry. It remains one of the biggest unsolved problems in general relativity. On the space-time continuum. The Minkowski and Euclidean geometries, as well as their curved versions discussed in this book, are based on concepts like a point, which has no dimension or size, or an infinitely thin line. Such notions belong in the Platonic world of mathematics. No constructions based on these ideal concepts are realized in nature. Matter and energy, as we currently understand them, are quantized. They consist of discrete portions or quanta, which cannot be divided into smaller portions. Thus, the pencil in the compass needed for the geometric constructions of Euclid is never infinitely sharp, and the ruler is never exactly straight. For this and other reasons, the perfect shapes of geometry are only approximations of shapes in nature, which, at some microscopic level, have a grain-like structure. We have not worried about this, as although the presence of matter introduces discreteness, the underlying fabric of space-time is continuous and can be understood geometrically. It may be that at some level the very notion of a space-time point will have to be abandoned. There is no experimental evidence that we should do it just yet, but there exist some more or less radical proposals which give up the notion of points as fundamental objects. One such proposal is twister theory, where space-time points arise as derived objects and light rays play a fundamental role. Twister space is a six-dimensional manifold whose points correspond to light rays or twisting families of light rays in the Minkowski space. The points in Minkowski space correspond to two-dimensional spheres in the twister space, which makes the correspondence non-local in a way similar to the projective duality we witnessed in Chapter 5. The whole of special relativity and some aspects of general relativity can be reformulated in twister space in a remarkable way, which brings up complex numbers and puts classical and quantum physics on equal footings. It remains to be seen whether the twister approach sheds light on the nature of space-time singularities, or indeed whether a final theory of space and time, if one is ever found, is geometric in its core. This concludes Geometry by Maciej Dunajski, narrated by Liam Gerard. Copyright 2022 by Maciej Dunajski. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Oxford University Press and was produced in the year 2022 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.